So we're starting a new sermon series, walking through the season of Advent, and you heard our text read through the opening moments of worship. It's a passage that gets read a lot during this time of year because it's one of the passages that helps us anticipate the coming of Christ, that Christ entered the darkness of this world in order to bring us into the light of his kingdom. And that'll be sort of the summary statement of our time this morning, that Christ entered the darkness of our world to help us enter the light of his kingdom. But I remember a visceral lesson that I learned about the darkness of this world a couple of years ago. So the passage begins with people walking in darkness. And so if we want to understand the light of Christ's kingdom, we need to know sort of where we're starting from in this passage. And a couple of years ago, I was visiting Kendra's family, her sister, in Canada. She's a professor in Canada. And this weekend was the time that I, the boyfriend, was meeting the parents. This was, you know, the big audition. It was a very important time. We had been dating for a couple of months. Things were getting serious. And so we made the trip to connect there. Now, at some point, we decided that it would be a good idea to go to Niagara Falls. That makes sense. You're in Canada. Why not? But at some point, when we were at Niagara Falls, we decided that it would be a good idea to go to a haunted house. I don't know why, but we did. And I like haunted houses. They kind of are all the same. You got like zombies and people with weird makeup, and they kind of chase you around, and you pay money, and they scare you, and that's kind of the relationship. But we thought it would be fun because we had looked up photos on Facebook, and the photos from this haunted house were hilarious. People did all kinds of crazy stuff. We're thinking, whatever produces that, sign me up. So we went in. Now, Kendra and I were the only people that decided to do this adventure because we're weird, and we did it. We immediately learned that this was going to be a very different haunted house. We went in and were expecting like lights and loud noises and weird things flashing in our face, and it was bone-chilling quiet and pitch dark. Cool. Very helpful, right? So then like after you're walking around trying to find your way, can't see your hand in front of your face, then they kind of start whispering things that you're not quite sure what they're saying. I mean, it was psychological warfare to its finest. It was terrible. They kind of like tickle the top of your head as you're walking by. Stuff that just gives you the heebie-jeebies. I mean, it's bad. So we do like 15 minutes of this, and I'm starting to realize that I'm psyching myself up. This is no big deal. It's just dark. If I could somehow get like a flashlight or where's my cell phone or something, this won't be as bad. And on cue, I'm thinking that I know how to get myself out of this situation. I realized a very important lesson about darkness. There's one kind of darkness that's bad circumstances. It's being in a haunted house. It's no bueno. It's not good. But there's another kind of darkness which says that I don't actually know how to get out. I'm in the dark, and what I think might be a solution is actually not very helpful. Here's what I learned. I thought a flashlight would be helpful, and right as I said that, two beams of light start charging at us at like 40 miles an hour with a car engine revving behind them. Like part of this haunted house was a car charging out of nowhere after 15 minutes of darkness. Here's the photo. Yeah, this is, I want you to notice that Kendra's being very helpful by cutting off 40% of my air supply, and I have lifted her off the ground, and we are charging away from the thing that I thought was going to make things better, right? Sometimes you've been in those situations. What you think is going to make it better, just a little bit of light, actually makes it very, 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 very worse. I don't know if that's correct grammar, but it's bad. So in our passage, there's two kinds of darkness. There's the darkness that says, I'm in a haunted house and it's bad. But there's also the darkness that says, I think I know how to get out of it, but I don't actually know. And the things that I try make it worse. So we read the passage, people walking in darkness. And what we often think of is the bad circumstances of life. And that's true, but it's not fully true. Because there's another half to that equation. In the context of Isaiah 9, you need to back up two chapters to know how this passage, people walking in darkness, what it actually means. And in Isaiah 7, there's a prophet by the name of Isaiah, and he confronts a king. And Ahaz was his name, and he was the king of Judah over the city of Jerusalem. And Ahaz was facing some darkness. He was finding himself in a haunted house. There was a foreign country that was going to invade his country. we don't want that. That's bad circumstances. And the country was Syria, and that Syria was going to partner with Ephraim. And Ephraim was like kind of like the older brother of Judah. They were the same family, the same people group, but they had a family falling out and divided into two kingdoms. So Syria and Ephraim were going to invade Judah and Jerusalem. And Ahaz says, that's bad. I'm in a dark situation. I'm facing dark circumstances. And Isaiah comes to him in chapter 7 and says, now listen, you think you know how to get out of this, but you don't. Don't forget that there's two kinds of darkness. There's the kind of darkness that's bad circumstances, and there's this darkness that's in you that thinks you're going to be able to get yourself out of it. You can't. You need to rely on the Lord to rescue you. And Ahaz says, that sounds weird. I'm not doing that. So he decides to use the smart tools of the day. He's going to be politically savvy. I've got two bullies that are threatening to beat me up. I'm going to get me a bigger, badder bully to beat them up. That's just kind of like street logic. He knows that. So he gets Assyria, which is an even bigger kingdom with even more military prowess, and creates an agreement. If you take care of these people trying to invade us, we'll be servants of you. This is going to be like a really nice relationship, and dodge the bullet. So he thinks he's going to get himself out of the haunted house. Here's the problem. The thing that he thought would make things better actually made things worse. Isaiah's prophecy comes true, and Assyria, the big bad bully, is far more oppressive and invasive and threatening than anything else. And Isaiah 8 kind of universalizes it, and it says God's people do this stuff all the time. We think about the darkness of our bad circumstances, but we look to the earth. That's the quote from Isaiah 8. We look to our own resources, thinking we can solve it on our own. And we are habitually driving ourselves into deeper darkness. And Isaiah 8 uses the word darkness to describe this perpetual, delusional thinking that we can solve the world's problems on our own. And the problem with that is that God's people keep making those kinds of choices. And Scripture calls this pattern of behavior sin. Right? Sin isn't just like a naughty list. It's this sense of complete self-sufficiency. I don't need a God. I don't need a rescuer. I determine what's right and wrong and best for me. And God's people continually said, I don't want God to rescue me. I want to figure this mess out on my own. I want to make the world and solve these problems that we're facing on my own. I don't need outside intervention. And they regularly and repeatedly rebelled against God. It's kind of like Thanksgiving. The night I just arrived last night from coming from my mom's house, and I was packing up the car. Kendra and I were doing this, and all of a sudden, as we're loading our luggage, like 6 bags of groceries show up. And it's because my mom is convinced that somehow, as 30-year-olds, we're still not capable of like buying groceries, and so she just like as a mom like still wants to. Y'all, any moms still do this? Like you just like, yeah, y'all know what I'm talking about. And what do the 30-year-olds do? Ugh, mom, like we go back into 14-year-old mode and say, we don't need this. Like we have outgrown the need for you to buy us groceries. But we kind of like Israel had done that to the Lord. Yeah, you rescued us a while ago, but we've outgrown our need for you to rescue us. We still have this rebellious sense of we want to be our own person, our own self-sufficient person. So when Isaiah 9 says people are walking in darkness, it's not just talking about bad circumstances. It's talking about people who are still delusionally conceived this thought that they can save themselves from the problems that they face. And when they try, they often find themselves in a deeper pit than when they started. Merry Christmas. See, we like Christmas that says light and darkness making bad things go away. We like that, right? You go out, Moravian stars are everywhere. We're celebrating time with family and time with togetherness because we're going to eliminate loneliness. We're going to volunteer in the community because we're going to eliminate those kinds of poverty situations. Like, we like getting rid of bad circumstances, but the Christmas spirit doesn't quite seem to fit with the sense of complete and utter helplessness and hopelessness, and you can't save yourself. Yes. But that's how the passage starts. We're people in darkness. Now, if that feels odd, think about history for a second. There's this great podcast that I've been listening to lately, highly recommended. It's called This Cultural Moment. And if you haven't listened to it, highly, highly, highly encourage you to look at it. But one of the stories that they tell is that Western culture has this story that we tell ourselves of progress, that every day is going to get progressively better. It's going to be an inevitable situation that's eventually going to end up in this like perfect utopia. And we tell ourselves that life's going to be perfect if we just give it enough time. And that every advancement that we come up with makes the world a slightly better place. And what the podcast says is that might not necessarily be true if you think about it. Because in the 1800s, towards the end of it, like 1880s, we were in the age of enlightenment and the age of science and scientific revolution. And we did all kinds of stuff that was going to make the world a better place. We were going to get rid of disease. We were going to figure out how to solve hunger. And we were going to, there was a common philosophy of the day that we were going to work ourselves out of the need of religion. And because scientific revolution was going to solve the world's problems. And it solved a lot of stuff. And it gave us a lot of benefits and a lot of things in modern medicine. But 50, 60 years later, all of those scientific advancements and medical advancements turned into weapons during World War II. And we created more havoc and more war and more death than we could ever have thought of just 100 years beforehand. Now, that's not saying that science is bad. That's just saying that human beings thinking that they could work themselves out of the haunted house on their own didn't realize that they can't. That those tools aren't enough to dig themselves out. Same thing is true with social media. Like social media, when it was invented, like it's going to create a world of connectedness. We're going to be more connected with our family. We're going to be more connected with the globe. We're going to have a much more empathetic view of other people because we're going to be able to talk with them instantly, be more aware instantly. And it happened. And we created a platform for cyberbullying that has increased teen suicide by numbers that are hard to fathom. And we created a platform for the oppression of women and increased sex trafficking. And we gave a microphone to ideology that would never have been able to spread before the use of social media. Now, again, not saying that social media is inherently evil, just saying that the things that we tend to look to that might fix the problems of the world can become the very things that oppress. Ahaz's problem wasn't that he wanted a better world or didn't want to be invaded. That's a good thing. We're supposed to want to get out of darkness. The problem is when we forget that the second kind of darkness, when we forget the self-sufficiency delusion, we're in trouble. And that's why this passage describes a light coming into darkness, and it describes that light not as a tool and not as an extra bit of advice. It comes in the form of a person who rescues. Right? The passage unabashedly says that Christ enters darkness to bring us to the light. Y'all know the story. It describes a child being born. The light entering darkness is a child entering the world. And that child, over the course of a few hundred years, we realized is Jesus. And the reason we know that is because in this passage, the child is going to become a king who ends all foreign oppression. Verse 4 says that all of the rods of oppression are going to go away. So no foreign powers are going to mess with God's people anymore. Cool. Bad circumstances that Ahaz was worried about? Check. We're going to take care of it. But that king is also going to reunite that family of discord, right? Verse 3, you've enlarged the nation. You're going to unite God's people again, and they're going to multiply. They're going to grow. God's family is going to be gathered together. See, what this passage describes is a rescuer not just from bad circumstances, but from the human heart, from this sinful rebellion against God's ways, against God's people. And the only way that that happened was for that rescuer, that king, to also be God. And as God, he was able to come to this world and live the life that we couldn't live. And then as a human being, he died the death that we all deserved and then rose from the dead to conquer sin and death, to conquer the haunted house, to conquer the bad circumstances around us and the bad circumstances and the rebellion in us, and to give us a new heart. This is the hope of Isaiah. It talks about over and over again. The haunted house isn't just a foreign power. When we walk as people in darkness, we have a problem in our own very souls. And Jesus comes to rescue us from sin as much as he comes to rescue us from death that results from sin. Now, as Christians, many of you in the room know this. This is kind of like this is the Christmas story, right? I've got this. I'm tracking with you. Let me ask you a question. How you doing? If you were confronted with the same choice that Ahaz had, are you going to trust the your own savvy moves of the day, or are you going to trust God's divine rescue? Which one do you pick, actually? So what happens over the last week when you were pretty busy and family started to visit and you had to bake like 45 pies and one of them burned and then you got grandkids nipping at your ankles and all of a sudden things are a little bit hectic and you just thought, you know what, I'm going to sleep for that extra 45 minutes and I'll deal with spending time with God later. When life gets busy, all of a sudden prayer life goes out the window. Anybody do that? Ooh, I do that. What are you trusting in that moment? I appreciate that you're going to rescue me from this haunted house, but hold on. I really need to focus on this corner by myself for just a second. I'll fix this one, then you can come get me later. I got you. And you fix. What are you trusting? Or maybe you're evaluating whether or not to make a big move, right? You've got a job opportunity. It requires going to a new city. And you evaluate it within an inch of its life financially. You evaluate how it's going to impact your family, what schools your kids might go to. You're going to look at the different kinds of opportunities that they would have to grow and develop. And it never dawns on you to think about whether there's a healthy church there. You figure that out later. Ooh, what's the thing that you're grasping? See, Ahaz didn't say, God is dumb, I don't like God. Ahaz said, I need to give myself some assurance by trusting some political things more. This is very nuanced. If you get more impassioned and more excited and more exercised over the impeachment hearings, whether he should or shouldn't be impeached, or what sort of political thing needs to happen in order to fix our country, and you talk about it all the time on social media or with your friends, and yet Jesus never really comes up in conversation. What does that say functionally about what we trust in? See, the thing that this passage identifies is that we tend to have spiritual amnesia. We know better, we know the vocabulary, but we get in situations of darkness, we get in haunted houses, and all of a sudden we think, I have to fix this on my own. We've been conditioned to celebrate self-sufficiency in our world so much that it is counterintuitive to celebrate being dependent, right? It just feels weird. And so we forget the promises of this passage. This passage is an invitation to remember dependency. You don't have to solve the darkness on your own. You are grossly underqualified to solve the darkness on your own. But Jesus entered the darkness of life. He entered into a place that he didn't have to come and was exposed to all kinds of horrific oppression and injustice and brokenness in order to grab you from the darkness and bring you into the kingdom of his light. That's the promise of the passage. And the question is, where do you this morning have spiritual amnesia? See, the reason we celebrate Advent every year is because it's human nature to do this. We tend to forget. And so we go through a process every year of preparing our hearts for Jesus again because we know that we tend to forget. And this year we're looking at the names of Jesus. We're looking at the names of this divine king, this God and man who comes in to rescue, because those names aren't just cool spiritual titles. They're invitations to trust. Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. We're going to look at one a week. But each week, the goal of that name is to soften your heart just a little bit to being rescued and to enjoying dependence again. See, Wonderful Counselor. Now listen, that doesn't mean enthusiastic therapist, okay? I have seen and love my enthusiastic therapist that I still go to regularly, and so it's not a bad thing to have one of those, but that's not what this passage is talking about. The word counselor is not in the sense of therapy, it's in the sense of counsel, like a leadership council, like the people that make decisions. And wonderful is worker of wonders. It's in the Hebrew, that's what this passage was originally written in. The Hebrew word is like supernatural. So we have a miracle-working decider of things. We have a supernatural executor of the plan. When this passage says that there's a person coming who is a wonderful counselor, it says they're going to get it right every single time. And they're going to work out the plan perfectly. And if you read the passage, look at it for a second. It starts in verse 1 and says, there will be no more gloom. We're going to do grammar for a second. Will be is future tense, right? Everybody's going, wait a minute. So future tense. Now, the rest of the passage is in the past tense. There will be no more gloom, and then everything else is written as if it's already happened. People walking in darkness experienced. They were shown the bright, all of that. They have seen. It hasn't happened yet when the words were written. But because there's a wonderful counselor who's going to guarantee that the plan is executed exactly how it's supposed to be, this prophet Isaiah wrote it in the past tense as if to say, yeah, like it's concrete. It's going to happen no matter what. It's as assured as the past is. That's how confident we can be that God works out his plan. Now, if there is a God who has come to this earth, lived the life we should have lived, died sacrificially for you, traded places, and is guaranteeing that everything is going to work out according to his good plan, don't you want to walk alongside him? Wouldn't that be invitational to be like, well, that guy knows where the exit of this haunted house is. I'm going to hold his hand and stop thinking this thought that I have to figure it out on my own. The passage doesn't shame you into saying, why are you so delusionally self-sufficient? It's saying, take a break. Take a deep breath. Stop fighting to save yourself. You don't have to. There is a wonderful counselor who has the plan figured out. His kingdom is coming. And Jesus entered the darkness in order to bring you into the light of his kingdom, and he will make sure it happens. Now, we live a couple hundred years after. We don't live at the time of Isaiah, so Jesus has already been born. Woo! And he already has lived and died and risen from the dead, and he promised to come again. So when we see this passage promising Jesus' first birth, we can kind of say, yeah, he did that. I know he's got game. That plan is working out, and I know that plan is going to keep working out, and he's going to come back again. And that kingdom that ends the haunted house, that kingdom that ends the bad circumstances, that kingdom that solves my own rebellious, sinful heart that still thinks I got it put together, all of that will melt one day. All of that will be solved. And if that's true, it changes the way you go about your day-to-day life. It gives you a sense of celebrating dependence, of celebrating that I don't have to figure out how to make that problem go away. The Lord will figure that out. And it gives you a hope that's able to have peace in the midst of darkness. See, the prayer life of somebody who recognizes their dependence is a prayer of confident desperation. Confident because you know that the wonderful counselor, the supernatural planner, has got it figured out. But it's desperate because you know how bad you would be if you didn't have his hand grabbing you. See, Christianity, y'all, is utterly different than any other religion in the history of the world. I'm coming down because we're going to do communion. Christianity, just in case you're wondering, I'm like, what is he doing? Christianity is different. Every other religious system, if you think about it, whether it's five pillars, whether it's reaching enlightenment, every other religious system says you're in a haunted house of bad circumstances. Figure out how to get out. We might give you some tips along the way. We might show you the path, but you yourself have to walk out and reach God. God will wait for you on the outside. He'll hold your keys. Christianity says you are so hopelessly lost and the darkness is so thick that God had to come in after you and pick you up. We're not adults who are rolling our eyes at our mom, who thinks that we don't need a mom anymore. We are infants who got lost in Walmart and don't know where to go or what to do and can't even fathom what rescue looks like. That's the truth of the human condition. That's what it means that people are walking in darkness. And it's good news because you can stop fighting to save yourself and rest in one who did the work for you. Are you tired? Jesus said. Are you weary? Are you burdened by the circumstances of your day? Are you tired of your family who is filled with conflict? Are you tired of the selfishness or the addiction that still plagues your soul? Are you tired of the racism and the oppression that plagues our city? Jesus has conquered it, and his kingdom is coming. It's not up to you to figure it out. It's up to you to rest in the finished work of one who will come into that haunted house, grab you by the hand, and walk you out. And we have a wonderful counselor whose plan is working perfectly. So here's my challenge for you guys. It's Advent. We have 24 days until Jesus gets born again. Okay? I challenge you to start every morning before you look at your phone, before you eat breakfast, before you get that first cup of coffee, take 10 minutes and remember your dependence. You might not feel it. It might not feel ooey-gooey or supernatural or anything like that, but just tell yourself again, I'm in a haunted house, and I cannot figure this out on my own. And then when you go through your day, you say it. That's a darkness haunted house moment. That thing that just came out of my mouth with my spouse or my best friend, that's a darkness haunted house moment. I need to be rescued. And you remember your dependence. You can do that in one of two ways. Really practical. The first one, do the Advent devotional. Okay? Heather and Amy put together something brilliant. It's got scripture reading for each morning, and it's a regular way for you to remember your dependence on this rescuer. If that's not your jam, there are 24 chapters in the book of Luke, and there are 24 days until Christmas. Read you one chapter a day, and just say, Lord, I'm dependent on you, and supposedly this story tells me so. And just see what happens. But for today, what we're going to do is come to this table. This table is a table for people who say, I cannot get out of the haunted house on my own. Repentance looks like admitting and agreeing with God that you cannot save yourself from the sin around you and the sin inside of you. It says, I'm helpless and I'm hopeless. I need you to come in after me. There's nothing that I bring, no contribution, but if you could live the life I'm supposed to live, Jesus, and if I could trade places with you and take the light that you've earned, and if I could accept the gift of that trade, boy, that would be my only chance. Everything that I've tried to save myself, every time I've tried to earn it, every time I've tried to fix it on my own, it just keeps messing up again. It keeps getting worse. This is a table for people who need to be rescued. So if that's you, if you've said, Jesus, rescue me, come to the table and celebrate that the people walking in darkness have a confident great light who's bringing us into the kingdom. If that's not you, if you're still trying to figure out if this Jesus guy is something that you want to follow, something that you need, that's fine. This table's not for you yet, but come up so we can pray and talk and get to know you. We'd be happy to do it and invite you to consider those moments. Can we solve the world's problems on our own? Can you solve those sinful impulses in your own heart by sheer force of effort? My experience, friends, is that we can't.